Hi, I'm Amy Goodman. Stay tuned now for Tell Somebody with Tom Clammer.
Today I'm making my administration's position clear on community broadband. I'm saying I'm on the side of competition, and I'm on the side of small business owners like Mark. I'm on the side of students and schools. I believe that a community has the right to make its own choice and to provide its own broadband if it wants to.
Fighters on this issue are the cable and telephone companies. They don't want any competition from communities providing services, and they don't want to be told that they can't rip us off.
President Obama gave a speech in Iowa last week promoting community broadband. In Missouri, a proposed House bill would outlaw it. Today on Tell Somebody, Christopher Mitchell, Director, Community Broadband Networks with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance, talks to us about municipal broadband. You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. Stand by for Tell Somebody. Tell Somebody for January 22nd, 2015. www.tellsomebody.us on Twitter at Tell Somebody Now. Look for Tell Somebody Now on Facebook and like it. Facebook.com/Tell Somebody Now. And remember, you can subscribe to the podcast for free at the iTunes Store. This is your host, Tom Clammer. The views and opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of the station or anybody else involved with it. We had a birthday to observe yesterday. Now, ordinarily, I just don't like to say unkind things about people's children, but this baby, born 5 years ago, was ugly. I'm sorry, there's just no getting around that. Yesterday was the fifth birthday of the ugly Citizens United decision delivered by a corrupt majority of the U.S. Supreme Court. Happy birthday. Because it only took. A programming note. Next week, my guest will be Professor Robert McChesney, returning to the show to talk about his new book, Blowing the Roof Off the 21st Century. Mark your calendar, tell your friends, and be sure to tune in next Thursday. On with the show. Last week, President Obama made a speech in Cedar Falls, Iowa, proposing to promote community broadband and asking the FCC to address state laws that prevent cities from building their own municipal internet services. Meanwhile, in Missouri, Republican State Representative Rocky Miller has proposed a bill that would make it all but impossible to offer municipal broadband in Missouri. Here's a couple of clips from Obama's Cedar Falls speech. Give a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
Hello, Cedar Falls. Thank you. It's good to be back. Now, on Tuesday, I'm going to deliver my State of the Union address. And in my speech, I'm going to focus on how we can build on the progress we've already made and help more Americans feel that resurgence in their daily lives with higher wages and rising incomes and growing our middle class. But since I only got 2 years in office left, I'm kind of in a rush, so I didn't want to wait till the State of the Union to share some of my ideas and some of my plans. I've been traveling across the country rolling out some of these ideas. Plans to help more families afford a home. Plans to make more students can attend community college without loading up with debt. Plans to make more workers find good jobs in high-tech manufacturing. And in the 21st century, in this age of innovation and in technology, so much of the prosperity that we're striving for, so many of the jobs that we want to create depend on our digital economy. Depends on our ability to connect and to shop and do business and discover and learn online in cyberspace. So this week I've been laying out new proposals on how we can keep seizing these opportunities in this information age while at the same time protecting our security and our privacy and our prosperity and our values. On Monday, I announced new steps to protect American consumers from identity theft and make sure that your privacy is protected. Yesterday, I spoke at the Department of Homeland Security about how we can work with the private sector to better defend American companies against cyber attacks. Today, I'm in Cedar Falls to talk about how we can give more communities access to faster, cheaper broadband so they can succeed in the digital economy. And I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Today, high-speed broadband is not a luxury, it's a necessity. This isn't just about making it easier to stream Netflix or scroll through your Facebook newsfeed, although that's fun, and it's frustrating if you're waiting for a long time before the thing finally comes up. This is about helping local businesses grow and prosper and compete in a global economy. It's about giving the entrepreneur, the small business person on Main Street, a chance to compete with the folks out in Silicon Valley or across the globe. It's about helping a student access the online courses and employment opportunities that can help her pursue her dreams. And that's why, through the Recovery Act, when I first came into office, we were trying to make sure that we prevented the Great Depression, but also start building some foundations for long-term growth, we built or improved more than 113,000 miles of network infrastructure throughout the country. That's enough to circle the globe more than four times. And we offered tax credits to help spur businesses to expand their networks. We've hooked up tens of thousands of schools and libraries and medical facilities and community organizations. And then we launched something we call Connect Ed, which trains teachers and spurs private sector innovation and is connecting 99% of America's students to high-speed internet. But, and this is why I'm here, we've still got a lot of work to do. Right now, 98% of Americans have access to the most basic levels of broadband, and that's a good thing. But that number doesn't look quite as good when you look at the speeds we're going to need for all the apps and the videos and all the data and new software that is constantly coming onto market. We've got to keep pace. We've got to be up to speed. Right now, about 45 million Americans cannot purchase next-generation broadband. And that next generation of broadband creates connections that are six or seven times faster than today's basic speeds. And by the way, only about half of rural Americans can log on at that super fast rate. And if folks do have good, fast internet, chances are they only got one provider to pick from. And today, tens of millions of Americans have only one choice for that next generation broadband. So they're pretty much at the whim of whatever internet provider is around. And what happens when there's no competition? You're stuck on hold, you're watching the loading icon spin, you're waiting and waiting and waiting, and meanwhile, you're wondering why your rates keep on getting jacked up when the service doesn't seem to improve. Now, in Cedar Falls, things are different. About 20 years ago, in a visionary move, ahead of its time, this city voted to add another option to the market and invest in a community broadband network. Really smart thing you guys did. This is a really smart thing you guys did. And you've managed it right here at Cedar Falls Utilities. Then a few years ago, you realized that customers were demanding more and more speed. All the movies, all the increased data, Instagram, all this stuff suddenly is just being loaded up. And basically, you guys were like the captain in Jaws, where you say, we're going to need a bigger boat. So having already made the smart investment 20 years ago, about 5 years ago, you said, we got to upgrade to a fiber network throughout the city. And eventually, with the help of some federal funding, the surrounding rural areas as well. So today, Cedar Falls is Iowa's first gigabit city. Now that sounds like something out of a Star Wars movie, Gigabit City. Here's what it means. Your network is as fast as some of the best networks in the world. There's Hong Kong, Tokyo, Paris, Cedar Falls. Right? That's the company you're keeping. You are almost 100 times faster than the national average. 100 times faster. You can log on for about the same price as some folks pay for a fully loaded cable bundle. So today you've got small businesses like Mark's that are serving clients worldwide. Google named you the best city in Iowa for e-commerce. And what you're showing is that here in America, you don't have to be the biggest community to do really big things. You just have to have some vision, and you have to work together. And we're seeing that same kind of innovation and that same kind of energy and foresight in communities across the country.
Well, to hear more about all this, I turned again to Chris Mitchell of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. You may recall he was on the show talking about community broadband and Kansas legislation last February with Todd O'Boyle of Common Cause. I had some questions about this issue and turned to him again. Give a listen. Christopher Mitchell is Director of Community Broadband Networks for the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. Christopher Mitchell, welcome back to Tell Somebody.
Thank you.
I saw on your website recently a posting about some proposed legislation to limit municipal broadband in Missouri. Can you tell us a little more about what that's all about?
Yes. The situation in Missouri is that there is a bill that has been introduced into the General Assembly that would make it all but impossible for local governments to offer services. It's basically designed to say that if the private sector is offering any amount of service, whether it's good, whether it's bad, fast or slow, local governments are not allowed to do it. And the interesting thing is, one of a few interesting things, is that this bill is not specifically about communication services, although it seems to be have them in the sight, but the bill's a little bit more vague, and it just talks about competitive services, which could be any utility, theoretically.
Well, yeah, your piece on the web had a link to the bill, House Bill number 437. It says, notwithstanding any provision of law to the contrary, beginning August 28, 2015, no city, town, or village may offer to provide any competitive service unless, and then a whole series of unlesses. That's pretty broad, isn't it?
Right, and actually, so there's a definition a little later on that says competitive service is a retail or wholesale offering of a good service or substantially similar good or service, which is provided by one or more private businesses within the boundaries of the city, town, or village. Now, it's interesting to me that it says also the wholesale, because you have cities in Missouri that right now are looking at building a network like Columbia, where they would like to build a fiber network on which other providers could deliver services. You know, the city itself doesn't want to go into business here. The city wants to invest in infrastructure that would enable private sector competition. And this bill would basically say, hey, state, city, I would say city, you cannot get involved. And even if you have very poor service providers, you can't even do a very minor effort to try and boost competition and choice.
Wow. Some listeners may remember we had you on, I forget exactly, a year or so ago, talking about legislation in Kansas that thankfully went away, at least for the time being, last I heard. But how does this compare to what they were doing in Kansas and what's going on in other states?
Well, I think the goal is substantially the same. And in Kansas, the bill was particularly troublesome because it was very poorly written and vague in a number of ways that would make it difficult to enforce. But aside from that, it was more broad in Kansas in terms of making sure that there could be no partnerships between a city and a private entity or a number of private entities. Here in Missouri, this bill, it wouldn't stop like the Kansas City working with Google, I don't believe, which the Kansas bill would have done. So this is a little bit more targeted toward some kinds of partnerships and outright municipal networks, but it's not quite as all-encompassing, although in Kansas the bill dealt only with internet service, whereas this is more broad. More nationally, this is the beginning of the year, so we're still keeping an eye on state legislatures, and we're not sure how aggressive the industry will be to try and continue restricting competition in states. President Obama just gave a big speech in Iowa in which he basically said that it's totally inappropriate for a state to restrict competition, and he really put down a marker that said he was for this decision being made at the local level.
Talk about that a little more, too. I did want to get into that Obama speech in Iowa. What is he proposing, and how would his proposals, if enacted, affect legislation in states that already exists, or, for example, if this proposal in Missouri was to go through?
Well, the president's powers are a bit limited in this matter because of issues of federalism. One of the things that he's already done is to encourage the FCC. He's filed a letter as part of comments on two matters that are in front of the FCC right now, the Federal Communications Commission in D.C., and they're deciding whether or not that they're going to use their authority to remove state laws in North Carolina and Tennessee that restrict local competition. The FCC has this broad power to remove barriers to deployment under certain circumstances, and those circumstances have been triggered. And so the president has already come out very strongly to say, I think the FCC should take this action. And although the FCC is an independent agency and the president can't tell them what to do, it really gives them more power and more of the inertia, more momentum to make this ruling in favor of the cities and to remove the state laws. So So that's one thing. That's a pretty big deal. Him giving a speech talking about municipal networks, and he went to Cedar Falls, Iowa, one of the older municipal broadband networks in the nation, and talked about how great it's been, how it's created jobs, it's lowered prices, it's had all of these benefits. Him just speaking out on that is tremendous. It really raised the visibility of community networks. Although there's one pernicious side effect in this modern era, which is that I'm afraid it will galvanize opposition from national leaders of the Republican Party. Historically, this has been a rather bipartisan issue, especially at the local level. Republicans strongly believe that this decision should be made by the communities themselves, and in fact, most of the community networks have been built in areas that vote Republican. But because the president came out for it, a lot of us are worried that we'll see a number of Republicans becoming more opposed to it simply because of the fact that President Obama has come out for it.
Imagine that. Now, back to Missouri for just a second, and Kansas. Legislation like this, I take it, is not just a legislator thinking in terms of government and public good coming up with this legislation on his own as something that's good for the citizens? Is there some other involvement there?
It's unlikely. These bills are very often the result of cable lobbyists, telephone lobbyists, often working through the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with. I think we even talked about it the last time I was on. This bill is not obviously directly from an ALEC bill, but the effect that ALEC has had on state legislatures and probably giving resources to the person who introduced this, whose name is escaping me currently, I would say that this is something that probably did have some help from the cable and telephone companies in terms of introducing. And it was Representative Miller. I just found the bill. It's kind of rare for someone to go out. He's received a fair amount of money from the cable and telephone companies. I'm sure they've had some conversations saying, wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to worry about this? Although they would have phrased it as, cities should not be getting involved with this. And Representative Miller may fundamentally believe that cities are foolish to do this. But that's what happens when you only listen to one side of the story and you're getting all of your money from the cable and telephone guys.
Do you have any sense, reading the tea leaves, of what the chances are of this or something like it passing in Missouri anytime soon?
Well, I really hope that it would not pass. I mean, we'll see a number of businesses come out and say that this is totally counterproductive, that the state of Missouri needs to be focused on how to encourage investment, not to discourage investment, which is something this bill would do. This bill would stop cities that need something better from being able to do it themselves, whether it's by partnering and doing some sort of wholesale arrangement, or whether they were to do it exactly themselves, like cities like Chattanooga or Cedar Falls in Iowa have done. Our goal would be that this bill not get a hearing, but this bill is something that he's introduced it. He's not a person that has a lot of seniority in the committee from what I could tell. And so we hope that this won't even be an issue, that this is just something that there's hundreds of bills every year that are introduced that never go anywhere. But if this is something that does start to move through the system, I think we'll see a lot of people that are really outraged at it and will put up a big fight to try and stop it. And I find it hard to believe that we're going to see another one of these bills go through. That said, Missouri does already have restrictions on how cities can offer telecommunications services. Now, internet-type services have historically been exempted, and we would broadly like to see Missouri, that give cities more power to offer telecommunications services. So if a city would offer internet services and telephone services as well as part of that, it would be the exact same network they would be building, then they should have that right. But I can't imagine that in today's climate we could get that bill through either. I think this is a situation where both sides have enough power to stop bills from going through, but neither us nor the cable and telephone companies have the power to to push something through without something that's controversial. They would not be able to get through.
We need to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Funding for KKFI provided by the Weekly Forum at All Souls UU Church. Each Sunday at 10 a.m., the forum will feature a discussion on community issues. All Souls UU Church is at 4501 Walnut Street, one block east of Main in Kansas City. More information is at allsoulskc.org.
FBI whistleblower Colleen Riley on Between the Lines, Friday morning at 9.
Welcome back to Tell Somebody. This is your host, Tom Clammer. We've been listening to Chris Mitchell, Director, Community Broadband Networks with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. You might have a pencil ready near the end of the show to note some websites. But now, let's get right back to Chris Mitchell. I can't get past this language about in the Missouri House Bill 437, no city, town, or village may offer to provide any competitive service unless yada yada. And I haven't had the time to think it through and maybe don't have the savvy to think it through, but that just at the outset kind of scares me. Have people can better assess the ramifications thought this through? Will they? What other services could this be? That just scares me a bit.
Well, looking at the definition, I mean, you know, you're talking about a good or service that's provided by one or more private businesses. Well, you got a private security company or two that's doing some sort of, private security work. Maybe the police department is now illegal. That's something that I think a court case might be laughed out at, but it's something that this language is so imperfect and so overreaching that that's a possibility. I mean, libraries, are they providing a service that's similar to a bookstore? I don't know, but if I was a lawyer, I sure would be thrilled at such a poorly written law being passed because, boy, it's an opportunity to charge a lot of fees to answer these questions.
Yeah. You said earlier that this probably would not affect something like Google in Kansas City. I noticed you've got a podcast these days.
Yes, we talk with often local government officials or other people that are involved in building their systems called the Community Broadband Bits podcast. It's a short show.
Yes, and I saw one recently, a gentleman named, I think it's Michael Limata. He was on this show a year or so ago with a guest host, and I think you had him on your podcast. Can you talk a little bit about what he's doing and would legislation like this affect him?
Yes, he is runs a nonprofit called Connecting for Good and in the Kansas City, Missouri area. And I don't think this legislation would impact him because as a nonprofit, he would not be considered a public entity, but what he is doing is pursuing some pretty smart solutions for making sure that the people who live in historically discriminated neighborhoods, historically marginalized neighborhoods, and people of low income, making sure that they have internet access. And I think about this a lot in terms of education policy. It's so important not to let this great communications revolution result in greater disparities of educational opportunity between the kids that go home to internet access and those who go home to not having internet access. So his organization uses a number of different strategies to make sure that people are connected within their homes and also that they know how to access and use these services and also that they have the devices they would need to connect them. But I think that as a nonprofit, he would not be impacted by this bill.
Yeah. In your article on the Missouri bill, you mentioned over the past year, the community of Columbia, Missouri, has contended with incumbent CenturyLink. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on in Columbia, as noted in that article?
Well, Columbia has Colombia has a challenge of they don't have very good internet access. They don't have sufficiently good for what they would like to see in terms of economic development and availability. You know, whether you're in Colombia with CenturyLink or a number of other Missouri communities with a telephone company called Windstream, telephone companies are often not able to invest, or they choose not to invest in all of the connections that are needed, all the upgrades. You know, they don't have as much money as the cable companies. So effectively what we've seen in a lot of places, and Missouri is, in Colombia is no different, is that people who have a fair amount of money and want faster speeds, they go with the cable solution. And people who have less money available for their internet connections and are willing to take slower speeds will often go with a DSL product sold by the telephone company, which in this case would be CenturyLink. So in the case of Colombia, you know, basically the local government has said, we recognize that neither the cable nor the telephone company are meeting the needs of our community. And they did a survey that actually looked at businesses in particular and how they were being connected, and found that a lot of businesses needed better connectivity than they could get currently. And so the city is basically looking at building fiber network out to a number of different entities that then, if you and I wanted to start a business in Colombia, you or I could buy access on this network to provide services to the those businesses. You know, much like you and I could buy a delivery truck and use city streets, you and I could basically develop a computer delivery truck and use the city's wires to deliver services to the cable and telephone companies to help them access the internet and that sort of thing.
And I wonder if you could bear with me here, because I think this might be, A, repetitious, and B, maybe having got the cart before the horse. But, you know, I am not particularly techie. A lot of issues go over my head, and I'm not real wonky, and some of those kind of issues go over my head.
You know, can I just say I'll be happy to go with you on this?
Sure. But
that is the case of so many people, and that is why the cable and telephone companies have had so much success over the years, because they use this knowledge and technology as a weapon against people who just haven't spent years around this technology and learning about it. And so I think it's really important for people to be willing to ask questions and to say, hey, you know what? I may not be as much of an expert on this, but I know that something's wrong, and I want my voice to count on this issue.
Well, that is good to hear, because I am quite confused by a lot of these things, but I do get some sort of sense I should learn enough to weigh in somehow. If this isn't a silly question, can you just define community broadband as opposed to Time Warner Cable or something?
Sure. It's a rather nebulous term, community broadband, and there's probably some competing definitions, but I think that ours is really good, which is that broadly it's a network that is rooted in the community and responds to community needs. In many cases, it's a network that's owned by a local government, a municipality, a city government, or a county government. But it could also be, let me just stop for a second. In those cases, we call it municipal broadband, which is a subset of community broadband. So community broadband is something that is rooted in the community, is really accountable to the community, and has some different ways of going about it. It's an umbrella term for multiple different types. And so municipal broadband is the sort of thing that Chanute, Kansas is looking at doing, and that's a type of community broadband. But community broadband has other things too, like there's co-ops, and in areas of Missouri, there's the Como co-op, which is doing, it's a rural electric co-op, I believe, that has been investing in really great internet connections for people. Because that cooperative is owned by the customers and is really rooted in that community, we would consider that to be community broadband. Now, sometimes people might include a local business that is running a really good service as community broadband. And there's a slight problem with that, I think, in that not that they're not doing a great job, but the local business could be bought by Comcast or Time Warner Cable, and then it's no longer community broadband. And so I'll often, in my definition of community broadband, think about the long term. And so if there's a municipal structure or a cooperative, these are structures that are more likely to resist privatization than a local company, which, you know, is not to malign local companies. It's just that that's the structure, and the community doesn't vote on whether or not that local company would be privatized. And then there's another model, which I think we'll see more of in the future, but we have not seen a lot of to date, and that's some form of nonprofit, where the city would not own it, and it would not be a cooperative structure. But you might have a lot of nonprofits in town or the local government appointing people to a board of a nonprofit that would own a broadband network, and that would be something that would also be rooted in the community. And the common thing to all of these structures is that the focus is on providing good services at reasonable prices rather than what Time Warner Cable does, which is to just try to figure out how to maximize its profits over the short term.
A couple of years ago, I was at a conference in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, and there was broadband going in there, and I went on a bus tour and looked at them, you know, pulling wire and all this stuff and hooking up boxes. Are you familiar with their system?
Yes, it's called Urbana-Champaign Big Broadband, and they shorten it to UC2B. And that's a network that was supported with stimulus funds. And the city, the two cities and the university worked together on that. And there was actually a rich, interesting development recently, which I think is positive, which is that the cities still retain access of the network, but they have partnered with a local company that's going to be delivering services on it. The cities and the university really wanted to make sure this technology was deployed and available, but they didn't want to operate it themselves. And so even though they still retain ownership of the of what they put in, they're going to be working with a private company to expand it. And that's a company that's been active in that area of the state for a long time and has a real good record in terms of putting community needs first. You know, they're not just trying to make as much money as they can and get out. I believe the company is called ITV3, but I sometimes mangle their name.
Yeah. And a few minutes ago you mentioned things going on in Iowa and I believe Tennessee. Can you talk about what those are and how they're similar or differ from some of these other ones?
Sure. Well, Iowa and Cedar Falls, that was one of the earlier community broadband networks. It was a, it's a municipal network owned by the city's utility, which also provides gas and electricity and water. And they've been so incredibly successful with their cable network. They had built this cable network back in the 90s and began offering broadband as well over it, you know, using the same technology that Time Warner Cable does. But they were so successful, and so many of the people in the community subscribed to it that they were able to pay down their debt early, and then they invested in an upgrade. So they now have a fiber-to-the-home network, which is sort of the next step up. It's the super-fast ultra network that can get a gigabit to everyone's home, which is about 100 times faster than the national average for downstream, and also provides upstream, which means you can upload files from your computer to other people just as fast as you can download them. And a lot of connections like I have here, and the connection that I'm sure you're on, you upload much slower than you can download. So at any rate, so one of the advantages of these community networks is often that you can get much better speeds in both directions, but especially when you're uploading, which is important for a small business. But so Cedar Falls is the first community in Iowa to where you could have these super fast connections anywhere around town. And when President Obama spoke there last week and praised them, you know, he said, hey, you know what, like 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you all decided to build this network. And right now that's really looking like a smart decision. You know, that's really worked well. You've created local businesses. You've allowed the businesses that were here to stay here rather than having to move to Chicago or someplace where they could get a faster connection. And that's the same dynamic we've seen in other cities. And I mentioned Chattanooga, which was the first city in the nation to have one of these gigabit super fast connections, which came on a network that they themselves built through the city-owned electric utility. And they are one of the cities that is, as I mentioned earlier, petitioning the FCC because Chattanooga, even though everyone in Chattanooga and in the whole electric territory, which goes even outside of Chattanooga to rural territories, they all have access to the super fast network. But there's businesses, there's schools, there's residents who all live just on the other side of a political boundary of where the electric utility can serve. And oddly enough, although the utility is permitted by state law to offer telephone service anywhere in the state, it cannot offer internet service just, you know, a mile past its boundary. And so they're asking, in Chattanooga, they're asking the FCC to remove that aspect of Tennessee law, because there's all kinds of communities around Chattanooga that really want Chattanooga to be able to expand to serve them. And this is a very similar situation in Wilson, North Carolina, which is the other state that's currently petitioning the FCC, because it also is blocked from serving its neighbors with this network that is just working out incredibly well for them.
How does the United States generally compare in internet speed in homes and consumer costs with other countries around the world, particularly I would think Western Europe and maybe like Japan or some Australia, places like that?
Well, back in November, I had an opportunity to travel and to give a presentation in Brussels to some telecom people in the European Union and at the European Commission within the and while I was there, I was keeping an eye on some of the bulletin boards and the billboards that I saw. And in general, the cable connections were about twice as fast as what I get here in St. Paul and about twice as cheap. So there's about a factor of four there in terms of what people were getting. You know, they paid half as much and got twice as much. In other places, the disparity is even greater. Stockholm has... people are paying much less and getting far greater speeds than we can get here. But in some places, it's not that much better. It's comparable. And so it depends on where you go. You know, you look in places in rural Missouri, for instance, or even Kansas, where there's some rural areas where co-ops have built incredible networks. And so if you had a choice between that or being in the French countryside, you'd probably be better off here. But I talked with some international analysts who really pay attention to this sort of thing, and I asked them, you know, if you could pick it, if you were to be dropped down at random in a random American city or a random European city, where would you pick, you know, America or Europe in terms of what would give you the best chance of having a really great internet connection? And they laughed and said, there's no question that it'd be better to be in Europe than in the United States on average. In urban areas. And so, you know, we have a lot of work to do here.
Yeah, we're number one, not.
No, and, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, we invented electricity, and then it took us a long time to figure out that the private sector was not going to magically deploy it to everyone. Instead, the electric system had turned into a couple of big monopolies, or one big monopoly ultimately, and you know, we figured that out, and we pursued some smart government policies that involved recognizing the power of co-ops in rural areas and encouraged municipal networks, and that led to everyone getting electricity on good terms. And, you know, we're going through that phase right now when it comes to internet access. And it's disappointing that the country that invented the internet, I think, has pursued such foolish policies for so long in terms of thinking that, oh, yeah, Comcast will do it for us. It should be obvious that that's not a good solution, but we're still working our way through it.
And I'm no historian knowledgeable on the history of electricity in this country, but I think didn't it also involve a recognition that this is an important public good and should be part of some kind of commons? And even if there's private companies, they're regulated as utilities?
That's right, yes. And some of that was even encouraged by the utilities themselves, who came to believe that competition was ruinous for them, and so they would prefer to be regulated, and then in many ways they took over the regulators. And so, you know, the regulators have not always done a great job. And so, you know, I have some sympathy for those people who say regulation is not the solution. However, I think we can do better. We've learned lessons. And there's regulations that worked very well. Rural co-ops, for instance, have generally worked out very well for making sure that there's money being reinvested in those electric networks. Whereas where we've opted for private ownership of in rural Kansas or Missouri, you talk to people about, you know, that are served by CenturyLink or Windstream, and they're getting subsidized with public dollars to provide those services often, and they're not doing a good job. And so I think that when it comes down to not all regulation being created equal, we need smart regulation. And in my mind, that wouldn't be embracing, you know, encouraging forms of public ownership and cooperative ownership to make sure that these entities that are supplying such an important service are meeting the community's needs. And if they're not, that the community can do something about it.
And I think in Obama's comments in Iowa, there was at least a bit of suggestion, if not a lot, of internet as a public need, as a public good, kind of this commons and utilities sort of language. How much is that entering into discussions elsewhere in the different states? Is it being drowned out by the telecoms?
I don't think it's being drowned out by the telecoms. I mean, I really think that that's something that is not controversial anymore. You know, 5 years ago, people were still saying, oh, it's a luxury, it's not that important. And occasionally, you can still run across someone who says, internet's not as important as like electricity or something like that. But fundamentally, here's the definition that I use for an essential public good, is that I can live without electricity. I go camping. You know, I enjoy getting away from it all. I can, you know, do that for weeks at a time. However, if a community does not have electricity, does not have running water, then that community is not going to see any investment. It's not going to see any businesses or residential growth. And so, you know, we know that internet access at this point is deciding the future of communities, because businesses are moving away from communities that have poor access, and people don't want to buy houses in places that have poor access. So I think, you know, the writing's on the wall for that. More and more people are recognizing that it is an essential good. And I think when we see people like Representative Miller that are doing the bidding of the cable and telephone companies, they find other excuses to try and pass these kinds of laws. They won't claim that it's not important.
The FCC is apparently, as I understand it, going to vote or rule or something on net neutrality that the former telecom industry head of the FCC didn't look too favorable what he wanted to do on that until Obama finally spoke up a bit in the same tone as he did, you know, 6 years ago or when, whatever. How does net neutrality issue, how is it involved or different or separate or the same as the municipal broadband issues?
Well, it's really quite separate in the sense that the Federal Communications Commission is dealing with both these issues at the same time, but they don't really overlap. You know, many issues are in front of the FCC at the same time, and we expect both of these issues to be resolved at the end of February at the same meeting. But you know, either one of them could be resolved either direction without changing the other one. But at the same time, we see the same interests in many cases, or similar interests lined up. There's a number of people who support community networks that aren't on board with what the FCC is likely to do to preserve network neutrality. But we see the biggest fighters on this issue are the cable and telephone companies. They don't want any competition from communities providing services, and they don't want to be told that they can't rip us off by trying to charge us more to go to certain websites. So, you know, in that regard, it's somewhat similar, and you see the same sort of anti-government talking points in some ways, but they're really quite different issues. And you're absolutely right about Chairman Wheeler. He definitely, I think, was going to take a different position on resolving network neutrality to basically what John Oliver has memorably termed, you know, cable company, and then a word I'm not going to repeat on the radio, or the FCC, a different division of the FCC will get upset with me, but cable company messing with your data. I think the chairman, I think, did take notice when Obama said, we need the internet to remain open, and we need to take strong measures to do this. We don't need another half-hearted measure. It definitely changed things, and I think for the better. We'll see what happens here at the end of February, because Republicans in the House and Senate are working very hard to try and derail that and to take any authority away from the FCC. It's something you have to keep a close eye on.
And speaking of keeping a close eye on, where would you recommend for specifically Missourians to keep up with where this House Bill number 437 in Missouri is going or changing or going away or going through, and also where to follow things more generally nationally?
Well, I think the first thing I would say to follow things nationally, and also we'll keep good coverage of the Missouri bill, would be muninetworks.org, which is MUNI for municipal networks.org. No space, no punctuation or anything. That's where we write on a daily basis about these issues. And so that's a good place. We have in the upper right corner a way for people to subscribe to a mailing list, so you get one email per week with all the interesting updates. Another good place on this is something called the Coalition for Local Internet Choice, which is an organization that we help put together that really works on these matters, both at the federal and the state level, to say that communities should be free to decide whether or not to build a network or whether or not to partner for a network at the local level. There shouldn't be state interference. There shouldn't be federal interference. This is a local matter. So the Coalition for Local Internet Choice is available online at localnetchoice.org, and you can actually sign up as a member there if you're interested, either as an individual or a business, which is really terrific, or any kind of nonprofit. The coalition is always looking for more people to sign on to the principles. So that's something. There's a blog there as well for developments, as we'll see in Missouri. So those are two really good places to look for information.
Well, great. We'll get links up at tellsomebody.us. And before I let you go, any other thoughts you'd like to share with the listeners?
Well, there's one other organization. You know, I'll say 2014 was a terrific year, and then to have President Obama speak out on this issue was really the icing on the cake. But last year, we also a number of people were instrumental in launching Next Century Cities, which is an organization of mayors and, in some cases, county officials around the country. We're talking about from places like Kansas City, both sides of the border, Austin, Texas, Boston, Los Angeles, Seattle now, major cities, but then also smaller cities like Ammon, Idaho, Mount Vernon, Washington, places that most people probably have not heard of. And we work together to share information among cities to help each other out. And we have a number of principles, and one of those principles is that this local choice should be preserved. And so we're seeing this organization is trying to get involved as well in both the federal level and the state level, not to say, you know, every community should follow the same path, but to say every community may have a different path. And we need to make sure that we're not just foreclosing possibilities on some of those paths prematurely. So, you know, we see that Kansas City, where they've worked with Google, is taking a strong stand saying, we don't want to see the state of Missouri taking out the possibility of other cities to build a municipal network. And I just think that's terrific. We need to see more of this where mayors are working together across the country. This is totally nonpartisan. We have Republicans and Democrats and independents. It's really everyone working together to say, this is an issue that we need to solve with a variety of strategies. Some of them are going to involve municipal networks and community broadband. Some of them are going to involve partnerships. And heck, some of them are going to involve AT&T and CenturyLink and Time Warner Cable. And the thing is that we just need to make sure cities have all these options available at their fingertips.
Well, that sounds interesting. We'll check that out. Christopher Mitchell, Director, Community Broadband Networks with the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I appreciate you taking some time with us again on Tell Somebody.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, and good luck.
Okay, I'm going to repeat some of those websites. MuniNetworks.org, M-U-N-I, Networks.org. LocalNetChoice.org. NextCenturyCities.org. And the group here in Kansas City, connectingforgood.org.
But here's the catch. In too many places across America, some big companies are doing everything they can to keep out competitors. Today, in 19 states, we've got laws on the books that stamp out competition and make it really difficult for communities to provide their own broadband the way you guys are. In some states, it is virtually impossible to create a community network like the one that you've got here in Cedar Falls. So today I'm saying, we're going to change that. Enough's enough. We're going to change that so every community can do the smart things you guys are doing. So not long ago, I made my position clear on what's called net neutrality. I believe we've got to maintain a free and open internet. Today, I'm making my administration's position clear on community broadband. I'm saying I'm on the side of competition, and I'm on the side of small business owners like Mark. I'm on the side of students and schools. I believe that a community has the right to make its own choice and to provide its own broadband if it wants to. Nobody's going to force you to do it, but if you want to do it, if the community decides this is something that we want to do to give ourselves a competitive edge and to help our young people and our businesses, they should be able to do it. And if there are state laws in place that prohibit or restrict these community-based efforts, all of us, including the FCC, which is responsible for regulating this area, should do everything we can to push back on those old laws.
Well, that's it. We're out of time. You've been listening to Tell Somebody, www.tellsomebody.us on KKFI. Comments or questions on the show, send an email to mail@tellsomebody.us or a tweet @tellsomebodynow. And look on Facebook for Tell Somebody Now. Don't touch that dial. Coming right up next is My Place with Larry J. Sprouts comes on at noon, Making Contact at 12:30, Jazz Afternoon with KC at 1. Check out the entire KKFI schedule at www.kkfi.org. And I do hope you'll tune in again at 9 a.m. next Thursday, right after Democracy Now! Check out links to past shows at tellsomebody.us. And if you appreciate the information you get on this show, please tell somebody about the podcast and the broadcast. Spread the word to your friends and contacts by word of mouth, Facebook, Twitter, email, or any other way you can think of. This is Tom Clammer. I'll see you next week on Tell Somebody.